Blog Talk Radio.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today, sporting backpacks and they're on their way, yo. Trying to learn the things we like, going to my class, everything's alright, oh. No one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No, whatever grade level or type of school, my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together, I'm shaping students that'll shape forever. The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools, and you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse, so I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse. Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, so open up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I run my class like I know I should, I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood. I thought you understood, I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah. Getting my class to spread the wind, being at school makes me wanna sing, oh. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. We can change the world together. Teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever. I think it's time we change the weather. We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future, and the future's gaining speed. If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed. And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is on time, gotta open up their eyes. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah, yeah.
You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses.
And we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Oh, class is online,
gonna open up the mind.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.
Happy holidays. Welcome to season two of Teacher Talks. This is episode 10, and this is actually our last show of season two. I am your host, Stacey McClam, live on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul international brand. I am so thankful to Brevely Black for this platform. This season is sponsored by School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching by Stacey McClam, available on Amazon. I am your host, as I said, and I'm an educator, author, and filmmaker. I have 10 years of elementary teaching experience. I've taught first grade through fourth grade, but mostly first grade. I've taught in Washington, D.C., Denver, Los Angeles County, and also abroad in Japan and Kuwait. Last year, I resigned from the teaching profession and wrote a book entitled School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching, where I describe why I left the teaching profession. The book raises awareness about the trauma that students and teachers experience at school. In between my teaching career, I went to law school to bridge education and the law for education reform reasons. However, after graduating, I noticed that it took too long to change policy and return to the classroom. I have a great respect for teachers and the teaching profession. Now I am transitioning from teacher to filmmaker. I have written 3 short films and directed 2 of them. My goal is to create films about education issues. I feel that I can better serve students outside of the classroom by exposing people to the realities that occur inside the classroom through film. Today's guest is Nichelle Cook, an award-winning educator and policy professional. She is the founder and CEO of Practigy LLC, a boutique educational policy research and consulting firm that specializes in policy analysis, strategic planning, program design, and curriculum development. She was also the 2018 Urban League of Louisiana U Lead Fellow and is currently a 2019-2020 Educational Leadership Institute Education Policy Fellow. She has taught on both elementary and secondary levels and has been instrumental in the development of educational programs, curricula, in various subject areas. Nichelle is an active member of Kappa Delta Pi International Honor Society in Education. Under her leadership as chapter president from 2016 to 2018, the chapter earned several national distinctions for its service throughout the greater New Orleans community and signature events geared toward advancing equity in urban education and strengthening family literacy. In October 2019, Nichelle was recognized as a recipient of the Distinguished Chapter Officer Award during the International KDP Convocation held in Virginia. Welcome, Nichelle. How are you?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be on with you tonight.
Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you, and thanks for joining us during this busy time of the year.
Thank you. So, I'm excited.
Yes. So you have a very interesting background, and I know you are deeply passionate about the education field. Can you tell us how about your education experience being born and raised in Louisiana and how you got interested in education?
Okay, so I am from Kentwood, Louisiana, really small town, about an hour and a half outside of New Orleans. And a lot of people know us as the hometown of Britney Spears, but we also have a water company that's pretty popular. Yeah, that's our claim to fame. And I grew up, as you said, Stacey, in a rural community in Louisiana, and I was thankfully top of my class. I was valedictorian. And at the time, from K to 12, from K to 12, I had very supportive educators surrounding me, a very close-knit community, and for all intents and purposes, I thought that I was adequately prepared to be whatever I wanted until I got to college, that is. I wanted to do electrical engineering, and I had never taken any pre-calculus courses. Except for just the regular advanced math. And so as you can pretty safely assume, I was in for a rude awakening when I got to college. And that's when it hit me that inequity was definitely something that was present, not just in my rural community, but also in urban communities as well. And when we say that children can be whatever they want, that statement is not created equally for students who don't have access to resources. So needless to say, I entered Spelman College as a first-year student, not as prepared as many of my peers. And I went from being that front-of-the-class student with confidence to the back of the class, I hope they don't call on me student. By no fault of my own, and it was just, again, an aha moment that inequities do, in fact, exist. And also, it really helped me to empathize with those students who I had before not understood, who were struggling in high school. It was for the first time in my life I was that kid. So after my first semester, sadly it happened to be the same year as Katrina. So of course, you know, that devastated Louisiana quite a bit. And so I went home after my second week of college to visit my family members after the hurricane had hit, because I couldn't get in touch with anyone. And upon returning, I was so far behind in my pre-cal class that I had a hard time catching up, and I received my first and last ever F on my transcript. And so in that moment, I was walking around the Oval on Spelman's campus. It's kind of like what other people will refer to as the yard on most campuses. So I walked around the Oval piers about 3 o'clock in the morning.
3 o'clock in the morning?
Yes, I could not sleep. About 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was just, well, what am I supposed to do, God? And after praying and talking to my mom, she told me, she asked me a question. What makes you angry? And of course, the F made me angry. But beyond that, I think when I really captured the deeper meaning of her question, what is it that that really fuels within me this level of righteous rage? What is it that I want to change in the world? All I said was inequity in education. Like, I want everybody to have access to whatever they really want to be, so that statement is not a lie. And I started trying to figure out how I could do that. And around, I would say, 2-3 days later, I came up with this idea with some friends of mine to be Thurgood Bethune. And I said, if I can't figure it out on the Brown v. Board side what all deliberate speed was, then I'd just be Mary McLeod Bethune and change it in the classroom. And so I switched my major to political science and just became really bent on getting to the root of why these inequities existed. And I decided that I was going to go to law school. But, of course, all deliberate speed took a little bit too long. for reasons similar to yours, I decided to pursue graduate education at Xavier University, Louisiana. And I obtained a master's in ed leadership as well as a master's in curriculum and instruction. And I've been doing the policy thing ever since, and also teaching.
Wow, you said a lot right there. So let's break it down. So first, your mom's question was very powerful in that, as you mentioned, trying to get to the root of what not only what you want to do, but why and how you relate to other students who are also going through the same thing. Because it's no fault of their own, as you said. It's just where they live. They can't help what kind of school they go to. And so I think your story is interesting, not just for that reason, but also being that you are from a rural area and you know the difference, the inequities even within the rural community and also as it compares to urban communities. And so that is very helpful, I think, to be effective in the policy world. So that's definitely appreciated. And you mentioned how, you know, with the inequalities in schools, I know many, there have been many cases, court cases, where certain universities are having, the top percent of each school be accepted into some colleges and universities to kind of remedy the fact that not all schools are equal. So there are some things that are being done, but of course not on the mass scale. So I know that some of your advocacy work deals in healthcare and a lot of the healthcare inequalities as it relates to education. So can you talk to us about that, children's mental health policy?
Oh, definitely. My work in healthcare, I guess, could best be categorized as public health. And through some work that I did with the Louisiana Center for Health Equity, I was able to look at social determinants of health, such as housing, homelessness, inadequate housing, access to healthcare treatment, among other factors that are outside of the school, but that directly impact the development of youth. So with that work, we were able to highlight some problem areas, like I said, outside of the classroom that contribute to the child's overall learning experience and really create a holistic picture of why children don't perform as well as we'd like them to perform, and also how the trauma attached to a lot of these social determinants of health impact the way children behave in the classroom. Because beforehand, I think that teachers were more apt to just look at issues in isolation without factoring in the other contributing factors. And we even went as far as to look at incarceration of parents and how that impacts student behaviors and overall performance. And most recently, we looked at adverse childhood experiences, and better known as ACEs, and how those things actually impact cognitive development. And so it goes a little bit deeper than behavior, but actually how that shapes the brain and the development of the youth. So, yeah, that was really, in my opinion, rewarding work. And also, I was able to most recently, as you read in my bio, work with OPEN, Orleans Parish Education, Orleans Public Education Network, through a fellowship, the EPFP Fellows Education Policy Fellowship Program. And we are right now diving into a lot of these social aspects as well. I'm right now in the process of drafting a policy brief to directly address gifted education and how that the legislation around gifted ed and protecting those students under IDEA actually plays out in the classroom when you take into consideration implicit bias, microaggressions, and other factors that may make it difficult for those students to even be identified. I like to often talk to, well, I have a lot of nerdy friends, so this is our day-to-day conversation.
It's important work, nerdy or not. We need it because the kids are not doing well.
Yeah, but when I look at gifted kids particularly and the fact that a lot of the students aren't readily identifiable by the teachers, then in my mind it brings me back to my own situation and not being adequately prepared. I just wish that teachers understood that a lot of times the student with superior intellectual capacity is not the well-behaved student. And the students who these accommodations were put in place for are oftentimes not the ones that are getting them. Because when we think of the good student, quote unquote, the well-performing, well-behaved student, a lot of us think of that kid as the gifted kid, which they very well may be. But there's also another subset of children who are gifted and non-compliant, or gifted and may not see the point in completing the assignment, or
maybe bored too.
They may be bored, and a lot of times we see that, and those students don't get the support that they need to actually reach their full potential. And so we have students who were capable of being brain surgeons end up being drug pushers. And it's just it's a travesty. And I personally look at it as a failure of our school systems to even recognize our diamonds in the rough when we see them. So that's really a lot of the work that I'm currently doing.
Okay, so I'm going to have you clarify just so I can make sure I understand what you're saying as far as the gifted students. So you're saying that some of those gifted students are misidentified under the special education bracket or just misidentified in general?
Under the special education bracket, a lot of people don't know, but special education covers gifted as well. Like, gifted education is, in fact, an accommodation under SPED. And so the same way that we would treat a student who qualifies for special education because of their deficiencies in certain areas, those gifted students have the same accommodations, or they should have the same accommodations for their superior intellectual capacity. And oftentimes those students fall under the radar because they don't look like what most people would categorize as gifted.
Oh, so you're saying they're not even identified as gifted. They're just identified as behavior students, problems or something?
A lot of times they're identified as students with behavior issues. Sometimes they're not identified at all. And in some instances, the opposite happens. They are identified as underachieving or underperforming, if you will, because of their unwillingness to be in compliance with the status quo in the classroom. And like you said, oftentimes it's just boredom. And I addressed this I was debating whether I wanted to mention it, but I addressed this in a book that I'm writing that I plan to release next year called Untamable Genius. And and in that book, I'm really examining the genius kid who doesn't fit the stereotype and how to break through to that child. So be on the lookout for that, shameless plug. But back to your question, yes, those students are special education just like the other students. But in order to receive the accommodations that come with that, they actually have to be identified. And a lot of times in urban and rural classrooms, that's not the case.
I see what you're saying. Yeah, that's unfortunate. How, when you were growing up in school, I assume that your rural school did not have any gifted programs, but did any teachers, I don't know, push you or have you doing different work from other students, or did anyone identify your gifts as a youth?
Yes, they did, although I was one of those, sadly, non-compliant gifties. I was identified at a very young age. I took the first assessment and was categorized as gifted. The second assessment didn't go so well, but that's another story for another day. We'll talk about the quality of the assessment. But
right.
Nonetheless, yes, I was identified early on as a quote-unquote smart kid. However, the accommodations, as you said, were not there, primarily because I didn't meet that initial threshold for the program for various reasons. We did not have a gifted program on site. However, because it was rural, in order to meet the requirement that one be offered, they bused the gifted students to a different school so that they could participate in the classes and receive those accommodations. I was not one of those kids. But what I will say is throughout my entire K-12 experience, I found myself out of place, mainly because I was able to breeze through the coursework. And although I had supportive teachers, a lot of them told me, well, one told me in particular, we teach to the masses, and the masses don't have the aspirations that you have. And so we don't have time to really give you the nurture that you need because we have to focus on making sure that the rest of the students don't fall through the cracks. And so I came up with a term which I reference in my book called superior mediocrity. So I found a way to perform and do what it took to stay on top of my class without necessarily reaching my peak. And so because I didn't have anyone to push me to the limit, I just kind of found my comfortable space being slightly above average without exerting very much effort. And it came to bite me when I got to college because I was at a point where I wanted to perform. I wanted to give it my all, but I had grown lazy. I didn't really know how to. And I would cry because I would think, I want to study. I want to max out. But I wasn't accustomed to rigor.
Right, right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Interesting. And so when you were actually teaching, I'm sure you noticed the same thing with some of your students, right?
Yes.
Some of the behaviors.
However, definitely. I noticed the behaviors. I noticed the diamonds in the rough, as I referenced earlier, those students who were capable of doing far more than the coursework required, but who had grown complacent as I had. And for those students, I tried to give them the rigor that they needed. But I, in that process as the teacher, I ended up learning and I guess I became more sympathetic to my former teachers because I understood the other part of teaching. I mean, the paperwork, I understood the high stakes testing, I understood all these other factors that made it difficult to adequately differentiate the learning experience on the regular. And so as a student, I was very self-centered in that I only had to, I was only concerned with my own education, and rightfully so. But as a teacher and being responsible for this entire classroom, I started to struggle with balancing, giving everybody exactly what they needed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I definitely struggled with that as well. It's hard. It's hard because, I mean, even if you, a teacher is supposed to differentiate curriculum, yes, but it's, I mean, if you got, like you said, the testing, you've got behavior issues, you've got not just slight differences, you've got major differences. You can have someone reading at the eighth grade level and someone at the second grade level in the same class. Like, that's a big difference, you know? So I think teachers need help. There needs to be more professionals at the school for either pullouts or push-ins to help teachers because one person cannot get to everybody. I don't know. How that can happen.
I think right there we're dealing with an issue of the policy providing solutions, but the economics making it not so feasible because, you know, with inclusion, we have a lot of students who are in the regular ed classrooms that before then wouldn't have been. And because they have to be in the least restrictive environment for them to perform. And I'm all for that, but alongside inclusion comes the push-ins that you spoke of and those people who can provide those accommodations. A lot of times, because of funding shortages, those people are not present. And so the teacher, who oftentimes is not skilled in FED, is left dealing with the regular ed alongside providing the IEP and 504 accommodations. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it can be overwhelming.
Right. Yep, that's true because a lot of times, yes, it's not, well, it is the special ed teacher sometimes providing those accommodations, but a lot of times it falls on the general ed teacher. Because the special ed teachers are oftentimes overworked also, and their caseloads are you know, so large, they don't have time either. So a lot of it falls back on the general ed teacher.
Exactly. Yeah, and so I think the whole thing, this is why I think that teachers need to have a hand in policy, because a lot of times the policymakers don't really know what goes on in the classroom. And so what seems feasible on paper isn't necessarily workable in practice. And so we mm-hmm. see in the classroom, for example, I'd even venture to say sometimes there are conflicting disorders in the classroom. You have a kid who may have oppositional defiant disorder in the same classroom with a child who may be on the autism spectrum with the sensitivity to conflict. And when you put those two students in the same classroom, then what you get is chaos. You get a student who's scared out of her mind and can't perform, alongside a child who is frantic and who is disorderly because they too are overwhelmed. And when you look at this from all sides, you begin to see that what's feasible when the counselors are putting the schedule together isn't necessarily as practical in the classroom when you're looking at the individual needs of our children. So that too is an area that I think needs to be brought to light.
Definitely. The policymakers need to know the real deal. So yes, we are going to take a quick commercial break and return live on Tribe Family Channel with Teacher Talks right after this.
Hi, my name is Stacey Matt-Clam. I am the author of School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching. I wrote this book last summer after I resigned from the teaching profession. Writing the book was therapeutic for me. In the book, I discuss why I left the teaching profession. I also discuss trauma and mental health concerns that many students, especially very young students, endure. Finally, I discuss teacher trauma, also known as secondary traumatic stress. This book is not just for educators. It's for anyone who has walked away from something that was not serving them. I am realizing now that my path in education is outside of the classroom. Check out my book, School Dismissed, Walking Away from Teaching, on Amazon in digital and paperback format, or go to my website at www.stacymatclam.com. Again, that's www.stacymcclam.com. You can find me on all social media platforms at Stacey Matt-Clam. Thank you.
Hi, we're back. I'm Stacey Matt-Clam, your host of Teacher Talks Season 2 with my guest, Michelle Cook. So before the break, we talked about a little bit about health and healthcare inequities. And so I want to go back to that conversation because I know there's a lot involved with that conversation, such as you mentioned trauma, the adverse childhood experiences, otherwise known as ACEs. So you received your master's before you were teaching or after?
I received my master's degrees while I was teaching.
Okay.
And after law school.
Got it. Okay. The only reason I'm asking is because I was interested to know at what point in your career did you discover that health care was an issue in the classroom, in school?
Okay. So that was during law school, actually. During my second year of law school, well, I knew that I wanted to focus my law school education on education because of the story that I told before the break. But during that time, I ended up landing an internship at Health Law Advocates of Louisiana. And we were working on access to care. Ironically, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer during that summer.
Sorry to hear that.
But she's thankfully cancer-free now. But during that time, I was able to really dive into just what access to care meant and how not having the ability to simply go to a primary care physician when you need one can impact everything. I mean, it impacts your ability to work, which impacts your ability to create income for yourself and your family, which directly impacts the ability to provide the funds needed to secure quality education and so on and so forth. And so it was during that time, that internship, while simultaneously dealing with my mother's health issues, that I really began to see how big of a role that healthcare plays. And I, through that experience and just trying to figure out how to navigate my mom's illness as an only child, I stumbled across an opportunity to create a healthcare organization at my law school, primarily because No healthcare law certificate program existed in the state of Louisiana at the time. And I was wondering why that was so. They were building this big health complex, a lot of medical centers downtown. But people like my mother had nowhere to go to receive the support that she needed. And so with that, I talked to my dean, and we agreed that a healthcare law certificate to train the next wave of health attorneys was indeed a need and should be a priority. So she tasked me with creating a white paper as her research assistant to design what I perceived to be the healthcare certificate that we needed based on quality programs throughout the country. And after doing that, I landed a job with a nearby Social Security disability firm doing research. And so it just kind of trickled. I say healthcare found me. I didn't find it. It just kind of trickled into education from there because that was always my passion. But the foundation for healthcare came from my mom's illness and the internship that I had. And thankfully, just to wrap up that story, we were able to create the healthcare law certificate. The faculty went ahead and did that with a lot of the recommendations from my white paper. And we were able to, at the time, get my mom the treatment that she needed and help her to go on and live a fulfilling life and also eventually attend college, which was a lifelong dream of hers. So, that kind of put some wind in my sails to keep doing the work. And I think the education piece came in when I was awarded a advocacy award from the Louisiana Center for Health Equity for my work at Loyola. And years later, I ended up doing the public health work and merging the education and healthcare together through that platform. So God has a way, I always say, of taking everything, all these seemingly unrelated experiences and using them to his glory when we allow it. And that's the only explanation I have for how I ended up merging the two.
Wow, what a story. Wow, and congrats to your mom for, you know, surviving cancer and then fulfilling her dream of getting a college degree. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's now, in progress. She's doing an excellent job.
Very good. Very good. So the connection between health and education. So I'm in California, and earlier this year, the governor appointed the first Surgeon General of California, and it's Dr. Nadine Burke Harris. And as you know, she talks about ACEs and trauma because she is a pediatrician. And so I guess I just want you to talk more about that connection between health and education because, you know, we go to school to become teachers. We go to our schools of education at whatever university, and we don't think about health. Nobody is talking about health. It's not until we get to the classroom that we're like, hey, these are some issues that are just beyond my classroom management. Like, there are a lot of other issues that I had no idea about as a teacher. So, like, give us some examples of that connection. The mental health and the, yeah.
For one, when I think we can divide that into kind of two sectors. We can look at the mental health and also just physical health and how the two interrelate. When we have students who are not getting the proper nutrition, students who are fatigued from long bus rides and fatigued from not having a safe place to sleep at night, I guess we can think about the Maslow's hierarchy. It's really hard for them to think about their futures and aspirations and, you know, changing the world and all of that. They're just trying to survive. And so that causes undue stress, undue trauma, and even to the gun violence epidemic and feelings of hopelessness that can trigger depression, that can trigger anxiety, which we know has a direct impact on a student's ability to take in information and actually use it to enhance their overall academic knowledge. So in that regard, it's related, but also when we look at the classroom and putting those kids together at a young age with pupils who have not been exposed to sufficient language at a certain age, then we begin to see that it hurts their peers because I'm trying to think of a succinct way of saying it, but we all benefit in the classroom from the knowledge of our peers. And so when you have a child who comes in having not been exposed to very many words, sitting next to a kid who is well-traveled and has two professional parents and has been exposed to a little bit of everything, then it creates this inability sometimes to form the social connections that they'd like to form because both kids inherently feel not like peers. It creates a clash because the experiences have not been the same. And while a good teacher can take this as a growth point and allow students to really learn from each other, oftentimes the social clash makes it easy for one or both students to end up being teased, and the trauma associated with that can create mental health issues and even bullying, as we commonly refer to it. And so all of this goes back to impacting the psychological and physical well-being of the kid because you got to deal with the fear of being hit, you know, if a fight were to break out. I mean, that can create phobias, which, of course, mental health issue. It's so many different things. And then, as you talk about in your book, secondary trauma for the teachers, which is another mental health issue that we don't really talk about. But I want to raise what the Southern Poverty Law Center here in the South has been doing to combat this and to put mental health facilities inside of schools. There is a lawsuit that's currently pending against the Louisiana Department of Health to try to leverage Medicaid funding in efforts to create more opportunities for mental health treatment in the schools so that students who are economically disadvantaged can still have access to what they need in order to thrive and to kind of just to undo some of the trauma associated with their upbringing, the things that they've been exposed to and the like. So I'm really glad. I'm sad that it had to come to a lawsuit, but I'm really glad that we're taking a look at mental health and what we can do with putting health centers in schools.
Yes, I would love that. That's what I think needs to happen. I'm curious. I wonder what their legal argument is, because I can't see the government using Medicaid funds in schools. That would be nice, but I'm just trying to think. We can't even get counselors, or So I'm glad that they're pushing others to look at such an important issue.
I think the argument comes down to students' rights to receive the counseling they need, and the rights to actually have the accommodations that they need for things like ADHD, bipolar disorder, just other disorders that impair their ability to perform well in school. And so if those things are not treated, be it inside or outside of the classroom, then the child is naturally predisposed to not being able to perform at the level that they otherwise would have, again, by no fault of their own. And so what the Southern Poverty Law Center is proposing is that there needs to be access to mental health services for Medicaid-eligible youth under 21, and those things have not happened. And because those things have not happened, a lot of students have ended up in juvenile detention facilities. A lot of students have ended up suspended for extended periods of time. And if they were, one, adequately identified, and also if they were receiving the accommodations that were put in place or that should have been put in place, then those things would not have happened. And so I think that's kind of it in a nutshell without going into too much detail, but it is on the Southern Poverty Law Center's website. And so if you want more information about what that lawsuit entails, you can visit splcenter.org. That's splcenter.org. I would definitely recommend checking that out. And the attorney who is leading up that case is actually someone who I attended law school with. He is a former elementary educator. And I think that has a lot to do with his ability to assess this issue from all angles.
Wow, that's interesting. I am going to look that up. One of my favorite professor in law school actually did a lot of work at the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so I know that organization does a lot of impactful work. She worked on hate crimes, but I know they have a lot of different disciplines that they work in. So that's awesome. And it's awesome to hear what your classmate is doing.
His name is Attorney Victor Jones. Definitely a huge advocate for minors and minors receiving adequate health treatment.
I think using the law and policy, it seems that when you see inequalities, the person that sees it has to take the position to advocate for it. Sometimes people don't see those issues, so it's like the burden is on us because we see there's a problem, so then we have to advocate for it, which is not a bad thing. It's just
interesting to me that, you know, it's just being in a position to have to fight for something or ask or make others aware of inequalities that are occurring or the need for accommodations or the need for whatever. Just interesting how it works. But
yeah, I think the I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think the telltale sign of a good advocate is the ability to issue spots. And so while other people may see a problem, the ability to look at the situation and identify exactly what that problem is and how it should be solved is the role that we play. And a lot of folks, nobody knows a person's problem like the one experiencing it. And so I think that it's not that the kid who is being bused all the way across town and having to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's not that they don't understand the problem. It's one, they don't have the platform, nor do their parents in a lot of instances. And two, even if they did have the platform to express themselves, they don't necessarily have the words as a background to identify what solutions are out there. And a lot of times that frustration manifests itself into what some would call righteous rage. They're frustrated and they don't always, it doesn't always come across in the most diplomatic way, but I definitely think that people have no problem identifying what the problems are. They just have problems labeling those issues.
Mm-hmm. And so your work in, as an education fellow, education policy fellow, you're working in the health care arena, but you're focused on education.
So it's a hybrid,
right?
So to speak.
Mm-hmm.
The program itself is centered around education, but because my background is in, well, it is kind of a mix of public health and ed, I have tried to use that space to really dive in on the, like I said, the underachieving gifted students,
mm-hmm.
and just trying to figure out why it is that a student who is born capable of really competing with the best of them is don't receive the resources that they need to adequately do it. And there's an article, a publication from Georgetown called Born to Win, School to Lose, and that was produced by Georgetown University Center on Education in the Workforce. And that publication actually talked about how students can start in mathematics at the same level as their affluent peers, and by the time they get to high school, because of the resources only, those affluent children will have grown leaps and bounds, whereas the non-affluent students will have decreased. And so while you got school actually training one kid to perform well, the school and the bubble that these kids who don't have access are being placed in is actually training them to perform in a manner that causes them to decline rather than excel. And so, I mean, hence the name School to Lose. And so I definitely think that that's something worth looking into. I mean, when I send my future children to school, I definitely don't want to have to worry about them going to a place where they're supposed to be intellectually stimulated to then some years later come out performing worse than they did when they were kids. Like, I mean, I don't think any parent wants that. But again, that speaks to not being able to have the atmosphere that's actually conducive to positive cognitive development.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm going to look at that publication as well. That's unfortunate that even the students who are not affluent, they're not even maintaining the same level that they started with, but to actually be to decrease from where they started. That's
Yeah, really sad.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we definitely appreciate and need your work. So thank you. Continue to do what you're doing. And can you tell us about Practigy and what kind of services you offer through Practigy?
Awesome. yeah, definitely can tell you about that. Practigy is a firm that I started in 2013 after law school because I realized that there needed to be a platform for me to do a lot of the address a lot of the policy issues that I was passionate about. And so through that program, I do individual coaching for students who need the extra boost in order to maximize their coursework. And so just kind of creating that extra rigor. And I do homeschool coaching as well for parents who have opted to take their children out of school, but just kind of need a hands-on support system to ensure that the students are actually getting the most out of their experience. Aside from that, I do contract work for local nonprofit organizations who are interested in creating programs for students. That is done through local 501c3 charitable organizations as well as nonprofit religious institutions. So churches who are interested in summer programs and academic summer programs and want to make sure that they are implemented in such a way that the students actually gain what they need to be able to perform well. And so basically creating substantive programs that are in alignment with the coursework that the students are learning in school.
Wow. I love it. That's awesome. And congratulations on the fellowship that you currently have, as well as the award that you received a couple of months ago. What are you most excited about with in the field of education with your fellowship as it continues on to next year?
I'm most excited about just learning. I'm a lifelong learner. Some people call it, professional student. I don't like that term.
But yeah,
you know, if the shoe fits, put it on. But, I mean, I'm most excited about just preparing myself to be of assistance to the young people that I come in contact with. I mean, I meet kids at the coffee shop. I meet kids at Office Depot. Everywhere I go that are interested in becoming their best selves and are interested in having the opportunities that other kids at bigger schools have, but they just don't have the resources. And so when I'm able to connect with these students and try to identify places that they can go that they may have not known before, it's just, I mean, a lot of times it's not even in the formal capacity through my company, but just in conversation, helping them by providing the knowledge that I didn't have at the time. It's what I'm always most excited about.
Wow. Well, thank you, Michelle, so much for being a guest today. Can you please give our listeners your social media handle so they know where to find you?
Yes, I can. The social media handle to my company is P as in Paul, RACTEGY. And that's on Instagram. On Twitter, it is PRACTEGYLLC. My personal handle is Nichelle, that's N as in Nancy, I-C-H-E-L-L-E, N again, C-O-O-K. So that's Nichelle N. Cook. That's my handle on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I have currently disabled my personal account just so I can focus, but I will be putting that back up within the next few days if you're interested in connecting with me.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for being our guest today. That's our program. Be sure to listen in to season 3, which starts on Tribe Family Channel beginning Monday, January 13th, 2020. You can find me on all social media platforms at Stacey McClam, StacieMcClam. That's Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. I'm Stacey Educator Film Law. Happy holidays to everyone. Be safe. And thank you, Nichelle, so much for your work and your insight.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today, sporting backpacks and they're on their way, yo. Trying to learn the things we like, going to my class, everything's alright, oh. No one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No, whatever grade level or type of school, my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together, I'm shaping students that'll shape forever. The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools. And you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse. So I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse. Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride. Gotta get there on time, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, you're opening up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. I run my class like I know I should, I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood. I thought you understood, I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah. Getting my class to spread the wind, being at school makes me wanna sing, oh. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. We can change the world together, teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever, I think it's time we change the weather. We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future, and the future's gaining speed. If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed. And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. I'm jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is on time, gotta open up their eyes. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses.
And we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes. You're jumping in my ride. Gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Oh,
class is online, gonna open up the minds.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.
Come along.